talking about interactive effects of social networks and neighborhood disadvantage on heavy drinking and its longitudinal study. So, again, presenter disclosures. So the following personal relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation exist during the past 12 months, and I have no relationships to disclose. So here are my learning objectives for today. As you see, it says describe. I'd like to, for you to be able to describe how social networks may moderate this effect between social or neighborhood SES and drinking outcomes, and also I'll be able to identify which aspects of social networks influence the impact of neighborhood SES on problem drinking. So a little bit about the background of the about this topic in general. We already have research evidence that neighborhood disadvantage is associated with alcohol outcomes. We also know that social network characteristics also influence drinking outcomes. But there's never been a study that has looked at both of these combined, so that's what we're looking at today. And here's our conceptual model. Basically, we are interested in how social network at T1, at our baseline, neighborhood SES at T1, basically that's defined as our disadvantaged neighborhoods, how that is linked to drinking outcome, which we defined as problem drinking, and how social networks influences that, how that moderates that relationship. Social networks being defined as support to reduce drinking at T1, pressure to reduce drinking, and having an increase of heavy drinkers between baseline and your T2 follow-up. So the original study that was conducted, it was actually done in Northern California, and we focused on the general population, those being defined as who were identified as problem drinkers but had not been in treatment, had not received treatment within the past year. And this data was collected in 1995 and 1996, and it lasted about 10 years. And interviews were conducted at baseline in person, whereas in follow-up it was by phone. A little bit more background about the study, that we had a sample size of 660. The sample had met the problem drinker criteria, which meant that they had two of the three of the following. So they were identified as heavy drinkers, which meant that they drank five or more drinks for men and three or more for women. And then alcohol abuse and social consequences, which is basically getting arrested for drunk driving or something along those lines. And then disadvantaged neighborhoods. We define disadvantaged neighborhoods as those who had lived in the area in the neighborhood with 20% or more residents that were living below the poverty line. Just some quick charts about the demographics of our sample. As you can see, the age was pretty split between the three groups. Education, there was a large percentage of those who had higher than a high school degree. Marital status, between married and never married, about the same, with 40%, and then ethnicity, large percentage of whites. And then for the alcohol severity index, for the addiction severity index for alcohol, we had a median of 0.16. So now to talk a little bit more about the variables. So we looked at support to reduce drinking at baseline. So the question that we had chosen was how many actively support your efforts to reduce alcohol drinking or alcohol or drug use. And this is looking at the number of family members or friends. And then pressure, similarly, we wanted to look at baseline. We looked at the question, has anyone asked about your drinking or suggested you cut down within the past year? And then lastly, for heavy drinkers in the network, we used the question, how many are heavy drinkers or problem drinkers in your network? And we compare that with the baseline to the 1 year. So moving on to analyses, we used generalized estimating equations because we were studying neighborhoods. We really wanted to control for neighborhood clustering. We use specifically logistic GE models, which tested the separate interactions for the three. We had three separate models, so poverty variable as well as the each of the social network variables. And then we did stratified GE models, and for all of these models, we controlled for the covariates listed: age, ethnicity, ASI, education, and marital status. So here's a table with our results for the interaction models. So the ones in blue are the ones that are poverty with each of the social network variables. So you'll see that for poverty and support, that was the only one that we had that had a significant interactive effect. And again, these were controls for our covariates. And then our stratified models, we broke it down by our social network variables, so support, pressure, and heavy drinkers. You'll notice that both support and pressure were significant with low support and low pressure, whereas heavy drinkers had a high heavy, meaning like there's a change, increase of heavy drinkers between T1 and T2. So this chart this graph just summarizes basically what we've seen in the past slide. You'll notice again that support and pressure had a similar trend, where the low and the high, or the low were the two that were significant, whereas heavy drinkers had the high group that was significant. And just to go over the limitations and strengths, that's all research. As we all know, research has strengths and limitations. So one of the first limitation was that there's recall bias, like any other study that asks for the sample to recall things that happened in the past. There might be biases. And then we use secondary data analysis, so we had no control over what specific questions were asked. So we were limited in that sense. We wouldn't be able to go back and ask the sample about specific things. Again, there was a small sample size after cutting down to only those who were identified as being in a disadvantaged neighborhood. And it was mostly a white sample, so it would be hard to generalize that without going through checking to see if other races had that same effect. And then the poverty variable was actually interesting because we noticed that we actually had to cross the threshold, so there wasn't exactly a linear effect until we crossed that 20% threshold. And then the strength of our study was that it looked at the general population. Again, that meant that these were people that did not receive treatment within the past year. A lot of other studies in the past had focused more on the treatment side. And then we used logistic and stratified GE models, which helped control for neighborhood clustering since we are looking at neighborhoods. And then, of course, controlling for covariates, and then we used three social network characteristics, which helped look at the three support for reducing drinking and pressure and heavy drinking networks, whereas most studies in the past had only looked at one or two at most. And our conclusion, So as we had seen in this presentation, supportive social networks can buffer the effects of neighborhood poverty on problem drinking. And that means that as public health individuals, we need to make sure that the prevention efforts we do are towards supportive social networks for these disadvantaged neighborhoods. And then really quick acknowledgments. I'd really like to thank Dr. Kara Kerjaffe for all her help through this project, and then, of course, the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, and, of course, the Alcohol Research Group. And, yeah. Do we have any questions? I know I kind of went through that quickly.
We do have plenty of time for questions.
Oh, yes.
You only have two times, and you have only two times, is that right? First one is interview, and then one phone interview, or you have 10 times?
So I only specifically looked at the up to the one-year follow-up, so only one phone interview after the original. But the original study does go over a longer length of time. But we were just looking at it's very preliminary, I guess you could say. We only focus on one, and then if we wanted to, then we could extend that.
I look forward to reading it. But my question was about other aspects of the neighborhood environment. I know there's research that's particularly with that alcohol outlet system, mm-hmm. Particularly high poverty areas, as well as racially and ethnically segregated neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that mechanism and its role in your outcome?
Okay, so question is that, what are my thoughts on how...
And where could you get that data and adjust for that? Or, and do you think that's something that should be accounted for?
For the alcohol severity?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's really important that we look at that it's important to look at it because it's... I'm having a hard time addressing it. Okay, sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, I mean, we know that there's higher rates of alcohol outlet.
Yes.
Alcohol outlet, high poverty, mm-hmm. and even racially ethnically segregated neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So just thinking about the relationship between disadvantaged neighborhoods and your outcome, alcohol severity, how do you think, do you have that in the data set, mm-hmm. and if you don't, what do you think the effects of, adjusting for that, how important is it?
How there's a high density of alcohol outlets and how that affects the disadvantaged neighbors?
Yeah.
Yes, there's definitely...
I guess maybe it's more a question about mechanisms, because you do, it's social networks, but what is it about disadvantaged neighborhoods? Is it just that, the relationship between poverty and stress as a mechanism, or is it something about the physical and built environment of high poverty neighborhoods?
That's actually, that's really a great question, because I personally think there could be effects from both aspects, but, that's definitely something for hopefully another study.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So we actually do have alcohol availability that we have linked with the data set. It wasn't ready at the time that we were preparing this abstract, but we do have longitudinal data on alcohol availability as well as other community characteristics that we're looking at in the overall study.
Did the neighborhoods use this code? No, we didn't. Yeah, the neighborhoods. We linked the original study with census tracts. So yeah, and then they merged. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. Do either of you remember? I don't recall how many census tracts we had,
how many on average were in the census tracts?
I'm going to jump in and try to remember the details. So we do have data. This includes data from people recruited primarily from one county, but it turned out that there was a larger area that was represented at baseline. So we probably have respondents from three different Northern California counties that are contiguous, and then San Francisco, which is nearby but not quite geographically contiguous. And if in those four counties together, there's 660 tracts, and there's about 600 respondents here. They're not spread out one person per tract. I believe that we had about 7 to 10 people per tract in the full data set.
Thank you, Kate. questions, we can take one more.